Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
So, Champions League evening ahead, including both Manchester clubs. Real Madrid play Roma as well. We're going to talk about the rule changes coming into Gaelic football. We'll have Mike Quirk and Billy Joe Padden with us after 8 o'clock. Interested for your thoughts on that. Declan Taylor from the London Independent talks Wilder Fury, which is on this Saturday in LA. And we'll hear more about those events over in Buenos Aires as well. Marcela Mora Iorahu, football writer and journalist, will join us on the football show. Richie is here. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
And it's Kenny.
Evening, lads.
Kenny Cunningham, that is. Hi, Kenny.
I can't be that famous then, if you have to introduce my surname as well as my Christian name.
Well,
that's
for good. A huge...
What other famous Kennys have we got?
He wouldn't say Kevin Kilbane, would he? He wouldn't.
Kenny G.
Follow Kevin with Kilbane, would he? It'd be Kevin.
Fantastic. Kev's such a boring Kev. Name to go with fairly nondescript man.
You're Kenneth then, are you? Is that it? Or are you Ken?
Yeah, you're whatever.
Officially.
How do you see me, Joe? Do you see me as a Kenneth?
No, I don't see you as a Kenneth.
I was a Kenny for a long period of time, clearly, obviously, toddler years and teenage, but I guess to a point I think you shed the last couple of letters. Kenny becomes Ken. And I think that's where it's going to stay. I don't think I'm going to gravitate towards Kenneth at any point.
Is this like that moment when Andy Cole suddenly became Andrew Cole because he wanted to be seen more seriously? You've ditched the Kenny, you're now just Ken.
Yeah, maybe subconsciously. Might be a bit of that at work.
Is that right?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a subconscious thing. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, but you're talking about it. So it's Ken originally. That's what you were christened.
Kenneth. Is that my passport?
Kenneth's on my passport. So you are Kenneth.
It's Kenneth, yeah. Actually, Kenneth Edwards on my passport.
Kenneth Edwards?
Keck.
On my passport, yeah. My dad's name.
Funny enough, the Kenneth caused me problems on my passport because I've been warned on a couple of occasions... Almost denied access onto a flight a couple of times because I've booked under Ken.
Yeah, well, Kenneth Edwards, yeah, but obviously some airlines, won't name any in particular, are very particular in terms of the name on your passport. Any small abbreviation can
just feel like
result in...
Kenneth Edward, a very English name, isn't it?
Kenneth.
I would have had Kenneth down as quite English, yeah.
We had a Kenneth and Errol back in the day, yeah.
Is Kenneth an Irish thing, yeah?
Yeah, there's a few Kenneths.
I wouldn't say Kenneth was common, but there was a few around. Yeah, there was a few around, wasn't there? Yeah, yeah.
And your middle
cabal. Your middle cabal of us.
Is that right, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And so your middle name was Edward?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody's got, you say that as if nobody else has got. What's your middle name?
Michael.
Safe. What's your, Rich?
James.
James. Well, that's more of an English name.
Ooh,
than
the two
Edward.
Kings here.
That's more.
Edward and James. That's what I'm thinking. Like King Kenneth Edward is what I'm kind of thinking. I'm just wondering, is there an English? Well, hang on, it's my dad's name, so steady.
Mike Murphy's all I can think of now.
He loves Mike Murphy.
Big Mike Murphy fan.
His year was made when he got the lift up here with Mike Murphy before. I was like, the guy from the rugby, how are you?
How many radio wars did Mike Murphy win on?
Not enough.
He doesn't need to win enough. Because he's just got the legendary status.
He does.
Joe will never have that.
Way. Oh, Joe's well on his way to that. He's well on his way. No?
Sorry, our TV thing's still not working, lads. We're trying to fix that. We're having a lot of technical issues here. If we can just get that cracked, that would be helpful.
Well, personal issues in the studio as well. Hopefully they won't.
Joe just can't get over your name. That's the problem here.
We're being distracted. Sorry, we're just getting something fixed in here. I know it's very irritating for the radio listeners. We'll get that sorted. So we've got Champions League evening ahead. We'll get into that in just a few moments' time, Ken. And then on the football show, well, hey, we're back, fixed, good. When you're in after 9 on the football show, we'll talk a little bit in detail about how you think Mick's going to go over the next 2 years as Irish manager. Initial thoughts, just to give people an initial flavour of how you're feeling about it all.
I'm really excited. I can't wait. Can't wait for the game to come around in March. For the first time in a long time, got a real that kind of surge of optimism, bit of a feel good, that kind of adrenaline kick inside me. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think Mick will make an impact. I tried to listen to as much as the interviews from Mick and Stephen during the week. I was impressed with both the tone of each manager, how he projected himself, what he had to say. I thought it was two really impressive interviews, and I'm very optimistic in terms of the state of play at the moment, where we are.
Okay. It's interesting, all the lads who've played under Mick, are feeling particularly excited. I guess you know what he's going to bring to the party. Kev's very excited. Heard Damien Duff saying he's really looking forward to it. And because, I mean, there's a level of, oh, are we going back to the past 20 years ago with Mick? And people say, well, what's he done at Ipswich? And Wolves, they're the more unfair.
But I think that what Mick done at Ipswich, I think, is an argument for him getting the job.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because I think what he did at Ipswich was actually quite extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pretty weak conversation, pretty weak argument to say, what did Mick win at Ipswich? You don't judge managers' qualities in terms of the titles, the trophies on the table.
The scale of what Mick did at Ipswich should be gauged at where Ipswich are now, in his absence.
Yeah, exactly.
They've tumbled down the table. He was basically keeping them bobbing their heads above water when they'd no right to be.
And even more than that, Rich, he had them on the verge of the playoffs on a number of occasions, and at the same time putting money in the bank. What he did at Ipswich is as good as anything that he did in his career, and he must be frustrated. I mean, I wouldn't know that he didn't. What he achieved at Ipswich wasn't the springboard for him to land himself into a bigger and better job, and it hasn't happened. But I still think that might come down the line for Mick. He's in the job for a year and a half. Let's hope it'll go well. I think it will. I think he'll get a reaction from the players. I think his presence, his personality, his organisational ability. He's got a good coach there with him, Terry Connor. Robbie's presence as well. Hopefully that'll have an impact, an immediate impact. It needs to with the players. We know how quicker the games are going to come around. And just that uplift in terms of performance really is what we're after, Joe. And if we can get that,
yeah,
hopefully maybe that can take us on a quest of a wave to the championships in a year and a half time.
We'll talk in a bit more depth after nine. One last question for now, and I'm certainly going to be cautious about ramming this home people's throats after talking about it quite a lot last night, which I accept I did. You paint a very good picture there of how it all may go. So then how do you feel about the prospect of things going hopefully as well as you expect them to, and things flying and momentum and a good Euros, and then in August Mick having to go and then a new manager come in when things certainly may not be broken, maybe far from it? That doesn't seem ideal.
No, that is the ideal.
Why?
That's the ideal scenario. Why? Where you want to, your next manager coming in into an environment where the team is playing well, confidence is high, there's a good energy, the relationship between the supporters and the players is what you would want. The Viva being energised, everybody looking forward on the your positive mindset. That's exactly the scenario you want with a new manager coming in. And that's what's going to happen. That's what's being agreed verbally between the managers, between the association and the individual managers, and contractually, that's going to happen. And I listened to Mick talking and Stephen, and they sounded quite comfortable with it, Mick in particular. I think he more or less alluded to the fact if he'd been offered a four-year deal, two tournaments, he would have taken it. Mm-hmm. But when it was explained to him, well, this was the plan in place, very quickly, he absorbed and thought, yeah, I can buy into that, I live with that. And in some respects, Joe, I think it almost galvanised Mick even more so. The fact he'll only have one shot at taking us to a last major championships with him as manager. And I think that'll almost, as determined as he was anyway and enthusiastic about the appointment, I think that'll focus his mind even more, that he'll want to leave this job eventually with his relationship cemented with the Irish footballing public, almost a parting gift to the Irish footballing public, mm-hmm. a place in a major championship final. So, yeah, I can't get away from the fact that I'm energised by the appointment.
Okay, good. I disagree with certain parts of that, but we'll tease it out in the football show. Rather than ruin the news round and fall out with each other and wreck everyone's heads.
Kenneth
is a text message in here. Kenneth is an English given name and surname. The name is an anglicised form of two entirely different Gaelic personal names, Cianach and Cunaid. The modern Gaelic form of Cianach is Cionach. The name was derived from a byname meaning handsome.
Jesus. Couldn't have teed it up any better.
That is the text of the month right there. The news round is brought to you this evening with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. So it's Champions League, Richie.
Yeah, and Manchester City need only a point in tonight's game away to Lyon to be assured of a place in the Champions League knockout phase. Pep Guardiola's side will be confirmed as Group F winners should they take all 3 points home from France. City start with Ederson in goal, a back four of Kyle Walker, John Stones, Aymeric Laporte and Alexander Zinchenko. Fernandinho, David Silva and Riyad Mahrez are their midfield trio, with Leroy Sané, Raheem Sterling and Sergio Aguero in front of them. Nabil Fekir starts for Lyon. Phil Foden again on the bench for City despite being widely touted to start tonight, but Guardiola was asked why the 18-year-old impresses him so much.
I think I have the feeling, the feel when I appear in the last pre-season, I was incredibly impressed. And I think he's more stronger, he's more conscious, he's able to play with us, without a doubt. So after the minutes he takes, he played, for example, last game, 20 minutes, he plays a high level, so aggressive with the ball, without the ball, is so intense. I have the feeling every time he played good. In pre-season, during the season, few minutes, 90 minutes, always play good. That's why when they ask for Stuart, so is he's ready to play? Yeah, he's part of the squad, I said from the beginning. He's ready, definitely ready.
That kicks off at 8, as does Group F's other game, which sees Hoffenheim and Shakhtar Donetsk battling to stay alive in the group.
Just 21 goals in their last 5 games for Man City, Kenny.
Yeah, they're forward, they're flying. As an attacking force, the kind of cohesion in their play, the kind of confidence that they're playing with the combination, some of the combination play which we're seeing, you know, the pace, that kind of dynamism they have, which we know in the team.
Yeah.
It's all coming together at the moment. They're really high-level performance consistently week in, week out at the moment.
It's getting to a point where if you're a big lover of football and you're thinking about going to see a Premier League game and you're relatively neutral, you should really make it your business to go and see them while they're this good. I always regret not going to see Barcelona when they were at their peak.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot to admire in the Manchester City team. Forget about the kind of tactical setup, but just in terms of the individual qualities of some of the players, some of that kind of combination play that we're talking about is absolutely fantastic. But it is worth mentioning the fact that, you know, sometimes you hear people talk about City, the level that they're playing, the goals they're scoring, you would think they were kind of 8 to 10 points clear in the table. And that's patently not the case. Liverpool are still only 2 points behind.
Yeah.
Tottenham Hotspur,
yeah,
nobody's been talking about, are still only 5. It's not a guarantee that Manchester City are going to be able to maintain this level of performance between now and the end of the season. And if that little dip does come, and there has been a couple of examples, the Lyon game at home this season just never turned up.
Mm.
Now, they have a couple of those games during the course of the season, during the Premier League. They don't turn up when they come to face Liverpool and Tottenham during this calendar year. They'll get beaten.
No,
it's as simple as that. And that could be critical over the course of the season. So as well as they're playing, they have not, I don't see it's a case they got one hand on the trophy. Far from it. Liverpool, for me, still have a lot to say in this championship.
There's a few texts in, some not necessarily in favour of Mick McCarthy. Managers are judged every day in the titles they've won. The bias is astounding. McCarthy's not even a Premier League manager. Ireland deserved better, says one person. Jay in Dublin, did Mick not have the worst Premier League points tally until recently? It's a backward step.
The notion that we're going to get a Premier League manager, I think, is really off. Like, nobody for once considered that Chris Hughton was going to get this job, because Chris Hughton has a Premier League gig, is well paid to have that Premier League gig, and it would be, you know, it's a horrible thing to say about your country, it would be a step down for him to leave a Premier League job to take an international gig.
So oh, totally would. He's getting $3 million a year at Brighton. He's in the Premier League. Absolutely. I don't know what Premier League manager we get.
But I don't think that argument stands up.
Okay.
The greatest respect to the person who made that comment there about mixed the points total, whatever it is.
Jay in Dublin.
In the Premier League. So that was basically at Wolves and Sunderland.
Mm.
And Sunderland, I know, I can vaguely remember, in terms, again, the financial situation of Sunderland, making very little money to spend at that football club. You have to factor that in.
You can't
look at the table at the end of the season, Sunderland relegated with a low points total, and think, oh, what an underachievement, he's been relegated, and that reflects on the manager. You have to look deeper than that in terms of the players available at the manager's disposal. And all you can ask of a manager, and it's been a little bit relevant in terms of the talk around the Ireland team of late, all you can do is judge him off the basis of, can he get the best out of players available to him? You know, forget about positions in the league and has he won a trophy or what relegation. Forget all about that.
Mm.
Is he getting the very best out of players available to him? That's all you can judge a manager on, period.
I've heard it been discussed, and I think there is a logic in it. I'm curious for your thoughts. So you could argue Ireland in international football are a championship team, and Mick has done some of his best work at championship level with championship players. So actually, in some respects, maybe he's perfectly suited for the Irish job in the context of international football, as opposed to Pep Guardiola, who might come in and start banging his head off
like,
the table.
Look at who was up against Mick for the job in 96. Like Dave Bassett and Mike Walker. Like we've never been fishing in that big lake for the big
paying
fish.
Much more money now though. We're paying 1.2 million a year now, plus a bonus of a million if you get to the Euros. Like we do have more money to throw around.
But we're still not going to get.
Doesn't guarantee.
Given the players we have,
doesn't
we're not going to get
there. Doesn't guarantee you get the best. You can throw as much money as you want.
But no, but you have more money, you have more options.
Yeah, you do, but you still got to pick the right person. And sometimes by paying the top money doesn't necessarily mean you get the best fit.
Mm.
So when I look at Mick at the moment, obviously I can talk from Paris experiences. I'm sure a number of the lads have of late in terms of our experiences under Mick in the Ireland setup. And we all enjoyed it. We all enjoyed it. It was a good working environment there. We loved getting in. We loved being together. The relationship with the coaching staff, Mick and the coach staff and the players was a good one. There was a healthy respect between us.
What's it like tactically, Kenny?
Yeah, we were organised. We'd done our work on the training pitch, didn't overload it.
Okay.
Yeah, but there was clear pictures in terms of how we wanted to play, how we were looking to close down. That was pretty consistent. Mick never deviated in terms of shape too much when we played for Ireland, and I think that helped.
Mm.
You know, game to game, we came in. It was pretty much a 4-4-2. People might argue 4-4-1-1. We never really deviated from that, and I think that helped. So when we came in, same patterns of play, you know, we're seeing the same pictures from game to game.
Mm.
And that probably hasn't been the case of me over the last couple of years. Obviously Martin's kind of jumped from system to system, 4-4-2, 4-5-1, diamond shape, 3-5-2, we've done it all. And that's not easy when you jump from shape to shape, getting the players in and having the bed in the system 4 or 5 days before a particular game. So I think that it was a very settled formation, a very settled kind of style of play, and we kind of understood it. We were kind of very comfortable. And Mick was very loyal to his players. I remember situations, players find themselves out of their club scenarios, not playing for significant periods of times, and clamours from people, maybe press or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, he can't be involved. He hasn't played any football. But if you did it for Mick, game to game in an Ireland jersey, irrespective of your position at club level, you'd be in.
Yeah, McAteer most famously around the Holland game.
Mark Kennedy was another one as well.
Yeah, and so that matters to players. That kind of would have been easy for Mick to, you know, put himself out on a limb if you didn't perform. Well, it's your fault, he hasn't been playing, he's not match fit. But no, we stuck by his players. I trust you've done it for me, I'm going to stick with you. You're not having a great time, maybe form-wise, at your club, you're not going, I'm going to stick with you. And those type of things kind of matter. That little bit of a loyalty when you're down, you're not feeling you're playing at your best, you're in a difficult situation, but the manager's got your back. I thought Mick did that very, very well. Very straight talking. You know, you knew where you were, you knew what you stood. Simple things like, but they matter to players. We've all played with managers, talk the talk. You're never quite sure. It says one thing to your face, you know. You know, he doesn't mean it. Talking to Jesse, saying something else behind me back. I don't know where I am with this fella.
Right.
Just people who are straight, you know where you stand with them. At times, they may not tell you what you want to hear, but you'll accept that because they're honest and they pretty much call it as they see it. So that matters a lot, I think, with any kind of working environment, I think, to be honest with you.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah.
Okay. Manchester United then play, Rich?
Yeah, and they're looking to end a run of 3 home Champions League games without a win. They have registered a first in the Champions League this season. They've arrived on time. Their bus arrived at 6:30 this evening at Old Trafford. Jose Mourinho side welcoming Group H's bottom side Young Boys to Old Trafford. David De Gea starts in United's goal. Antonio Valencia makes his return at right back with Chris Smalling, Phil Jones and Luke Shaw making up the rest of that back four. The rather mobile looking midfield of Nemanja Matic, Marouane Fellaini and Fred, and then in front of them Jesse Lingard, Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial. A United win coupled with a Valencia defeat away to Juventus will see United assured of a last 16 berth.
Pogba and Lukaku are on the bench, in case Manchester United fans are wondering there.
Yeah, well, look, I think we've had that kind of the Pogba debate. I'm still pretty consistent in terms of with Pogba, you've got to handle him a certain way.
Mm.
And if his form deviates, a certain players, their form deviates up and down, you've got to stick with him. There's an argument for some players taking them out of the forward line and sitting them out, benching them and then putting them back in. For someone like Pogba, the type of player that he is, his stature, his profile, for me, it hurts him mentally. It hurts him taking him out of the team and the relationship suffers. I think it suffered already. I think they're struggling anyway.
Yeah.
There's obviously distance. We're talking about Mick in terms of man management. There's clear distance between Pogba and Mourinho already. And this won't help as much as Mourinho might flare it up. I've got to rotate the squad. I've got to get Fred a bit of kind of game time or whatever, which I think he has to do. Still have to find out if this lad Fred is good enough. Spent a huge amount of money on him.
Yeah.
He was meant to be the solution to centre midfield. Up to now, it doesn't look as if that's the case. But in terms of that relationship with Pogba, for me, this really doesn't help.
Okay. Real Madrid?
Yeah, they are looking to bounce back from their La Liga defeat to Eibar at the weekend. They travel to Roma. That also kicks off at 8. There was a 5:55 start in Moscow, where it is currently CSK 1, Victoria Plzen 1. It was a Nikola Vlasic penalty that gave CSK the lead. An equaliser coming from the Czech champions just after half-time. Roman Prochazka with that goal after missing a penalty just before the break to the Slovak striker. Elsewhere this evening in Group E, it's currently AEK Athens 0, Ajax 1. A Dusan Tadic penalty in the past few moments for the visitors after AEK had Marco Lavia dismissed for a blatant handball of Klaas-Jan Huntelaar in the box. And meanwhile, leaders Bayern Munich entertain Benfica from 8. That score, by the way, in Athens would see Ajax through to the knockout phase with a game to spare. The quarter-final lineup in the EFL Cup will be completed tonight with Leicester and Southampton playing their rearranged round 4 game at the King Power. It's amazing what international football will do for you, because Republic of Ireland striker Michael Obafemi earns a first start for the Saints. Tonight, kickoff is at 7:45, and there's a home quarter-final with holders Manchester City awaiting the winners. GA President John Horan insists they're not a knee-jerk organisation. That's despite agreeing to meet with the GPA over the incoming football rule changes. The Players Association is unhappy that the changes are to be trialled in next year's Allianz Leagues. Dusan Tadic just got a second. The limiting of 3 consecutive hand passes is the rule with which the GPA have the biggest problem, with 96% of their membership believed to be against it. Horan says the decisions of Central Council are unlikely to be reversed so quickly. And Jack McCaffrey joined OTBAM this morning and had his say on those proposed changes.
Everyone's presuming is that the rules are being brought in to tackle defensive football, and from just giving them a very cursory glance, I haven't given them much thought, they seem to be kind of dealing with the symptoms of playing against defensive systems as opposed to dealing with the defensive systems itself. So look, nobody wants to particularly see, you know, over and back and over and back and over and back, but you know, to punish the team that are doing that without maybe addressing the issue as to why it's happening might not have the effect that maybe people think it will. And you know, you've the sideline kick one where it has to go forward, so I just don't understand why anyone on the opposition team would stay up the pitch, because the ball can legally not go there.
So that interview with McCaffrey will go out tomorrow, and we'll be talking about this just after 8 o'clock with Mike Quirk and Billy Joe Patton. 3 hand passes in a row and then you have to kick it, Kenny. What's your immediate reaction to that? As yeah, a man who graced Croke Park with Desi Farrell and was one of the great losses to GAA, they say.
Well, I remember when the real changes were posted.
Yeah, you were in here, I remember.
Yeah, I was, yeah. Like, and I thought, I could see the logic too. I was surprised how strong the players have been in terms of how they voted now. 96% on the 3.
Against it, yeah.
Hand passes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that surprised me. I mean,
There have been a few trial games, interestingly, and what seems to have happened, because, I mean, look, when you make any law change, you're dealing with the potential for unintended consequences and actually making a bad situation worse. And it seems in a couple of freshers games at university level to have resulted in hand pass 1, hand pass 2, hand pass 3, and then a player, if he's in any trouble at all, which he often is, checking back and then kicking the ball backwards, and then hand pass 1, hand pass 2, hand pass 3, a check back and kicking the ball backwards. Because still, regardless of the rules, teams don't want to give up possession. And so we're seeing lots of players checking back and kicking the ball backwards, and then they get those 3 hand passes again. So there's been an initial sense that we're not sure how well this is working. And the other argument put forward as well, that sometimes you need your 3, 4, 5 quick hand passes closer to goal to try and work chances. You know, the argument is you need as much flexibility to work a score as possible. So you're limiting the attacking players when they're closer to goal.
Yeah, no, I can understand that argument in turn, because sometimes it's good playing the congested area in around the goal. It's good skill to be able to make quick successive hand pass, move the ball, find that little yard of space, maybe get your shot off into the top corner of the net. So no, I think that is a fair argument. I would respect the views of the players, in all honesty. I think you do have to take it on board. It's got to be a joint thing, though. It can't be loggerheads, kind of, in terms of the association and the players. I mean, everybody wants the same thing at the end of the day. Everybody's looking for the same,
better,
you know,
product,
what I mean?
Yeah,
exactly. So hopefully, by hook or by crook, they'll get there.
It's potentially very tough on the teams as well, in that this thing's going to be trialled across the pre-season competitions, but ultimately across the Allianz Leagues. And so the league is a serious competition. For a lot of teams, it's the thing they're really targeting now. So you can imagine the difference in tactics and approach, where you have this set of rules for the league and then pretty quick turnaround to your championship games, maybe your most important games of your year. Like, you might have to completely reinvent how you're going about your business. It's like, imagine we said to you in a game where you can go 2 touch and then it's all in.
Totally changes players you'd pick, how you go about playing.
Yeah.
So that's tough, I think, for managers to get their heads around.
But we're not at a point in terms of the GAA where something really needs to be. Is there not a general consensus out there in terms of the entertainment factor, what we're seeing now and have been for quite some time, that something needs to change?
Yeah.
Something has to be done. So what if the players have voted it, what have the players coming up with? Because like I said, I've got a huge amount of time for the players in terms of their opinions and where they see the answers lay. So it's all about voting things down, say, that's no good, that's going to be... But what's the alternative, to continue as we are, or...?
No, I don't think anyone thinks that's the right... Well, maybe some players do, actually. You talk to a lot of players, they think the game is in good shape. I don't know who said it. I saw someone say it, and I just thought it was a fair suggestion, whereby once you cross into the opposition half, you can't go backwards. And so you can still hand pass as much as you want, but that could really speed things up, because if you cross the halfway line and suddenly an opposition presses you knowing you can't go back, then you really have to speed up your movement, you've got to get things going. And it feels like a less dramatic change for the game in some respects, because it's the checking back into your own half and starting again which really slows it down for me. Like, I don't think, like, if players kicking it back, or that's a nightmare, that means we're back to the same old same.
Well, I wouldn't see the purpose in that. I know, I understand what you're saying, if that's been happening, but why would you kick the ball kind of 20 yards?
Keep
you're
possession.
Not gaining any.
No, if it's purely,
so that's it, just purely to run the clock, you're talking about run the clock down
just
here.
Keep the ball and try and work a better opportunity. If there's nothing on, come back.
Yeah, but if you're in possession of the ball and you're chasing the game, you have to get points, you're behind.
Yeah.
You have to force, get on the front foot, get in the opposition half, get close to the opposition goal. Surely you're not going to take that option.
Probably not then, but I mean, look, the last 5 or 10 minutes of a game with one team chasing can be exciting even now. This is more for the general play. And so, there's...
Well, I think that's a fair comeback in terms of, that's what it's got to be, surely. It's got to be a bit of a dialogue. I think you have to see it. You have to see it
on
the pitch.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
And you could argue, I think there's an argument there for you got to see it at the highest level. That is an argument. There's no point in saying, let's throw what's you on the 15s. You know what I mean? Let's have a look. And you've got to see it as close
to the best players.
Yeah, exactly. Like at the highest level that you can in terms of how it's going to work.
Then,
so
I presume they'll have to then introduce it for all club games. Can you imagine average club referees having to try and count hand passes?
There's also going to be sin bin issues as well. It's not just the hand pass thing, where you're going to have like multiple possible.
But they haven't done this like FIFA. But in football, say in FIFA, when they've introduced, let's have a look at a few different things. They haven't. It hasn't been a case of let's roll it out worldwide for all FIFA competitions. They haven't. They've restricted it to a certain
age group,
to a certain age group in a certain league, and just had a look at it in isolation. And if it works, then they've rolled it out. I don't think it's a case. Well, everybody's got to play it immediately. Might be a case of let's have a look for a short period of time at a certain level. Let's see what works, what doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's going to be must be a little bit of a trial and error.
Yeah, no,
that's perception in your head, Rich, I think, in terms of that's definitely not going to work. But actually, the reality of it, when you see it, I was wrong about that.
No, that's a fair point. Now, you do have better referees at inter-county level than you may at club level around the country. So they're trying to count steps, they're trying to count
hand passes.
Now, so
they're trying to keep an eye on who's down to 6 minutes 45 in the sim bin, who's down to 5 minutes and 20, you know, that kind of stuff.
There's an interesting point. Malachy Clerken had a piece. One of the other rule changes, which is proving less contentious, is for a sideline ball, you have to kick it forward.
Yeah. They're not keen on that either.
No, they've
GPA, the penalty, 64% are against that as well.
Well, it seems, so one, I think it was a university coach said to Clerken that he said, because here's the problem. I mean, with any set of rules, you'll have very intelligent coaches wondering, well, how can we manipulate these rules
to suit us. Yeah.
So he was saying, some university coach said in Malachy Lurgan's piece in the Times, it won't be long before you see Gaelic football teams, if this comes in, kicking for touch right in the corner of the opposition field.
Yeah,
inside the 20,
and then pressing up, like a full court press, trying to force a turnover there. So you'll have play. You could get to a stage where teams will get so good at that rugby style, they'll kick for touch into the opposition corner.
Ah, class lineouts. That's what we need.
You know, see the whole rule of unintended consequences here is enormous when you're changing these rules, because coaches will get very clever with them. So we'll have to see how it's trialled out.
Yeah.
But that's what's going on in the world of GAA, Kenny.
Yeah, no, it is interesting.
We'll be talking about that after 8 o'clock with Billy Joe Patton and Mike Quirk.
Harry Kenny's made his third signing as St. Pat's manager. Cian Coleman has left Limerick for the Inchicore club. 21-year-old scored 3 times from midfield in 30 appearances for Limerick last term. He joins Gary Shaw and Dave Webster at Richmond Park for the 2019 season. While Donegal cyclist Philip Dignan's announced his retirement from the sport. The 35-year-old spent the last 5 years at Team Sky and says he makes his decision with a combination of sadness and a huge sense of pride and optimism. The highlight of Dignan's career was a stage win at the 2009 Vuelta, which was Ireland's first Grand Tour stage victory in 17 years. He went on to finish in the top 10 that year. And Dignan says he feels grateful and proud to have finished his career at what he calls the best team in the world. And the president of Boca Juniors has requested his side be granted a walkover in the second leg of the Copa Libertadores final with Buenos Aires rivals River Plate. The second leg was twice postponed over the weekend, with the game having been originally set for Saturday. The initial postponement came to pass after the Boca bus was attacked with a number of players injured as they made their way to the Monumental Stadium. At a meeting with South American football's governing body today, Boca president Daniel Angelici requested his side be handed victory and River disqualified from the tournament. But CONMEBOL say the second leg will be played on either December 8th or 9th at a location yet to be decided, but it will be outside of Argentina. The Paraguayan capital of Asunción was a mooted venue, but neither club are keen on the proposal.
Outside of Argentina? I thought you were going to say the Buenos Aires. No. Argentina.
They can't be trusted.
Oh my God.
We'll talk to Marcela Mora Iorahu on the football show. She's a brilliant Argentinian football writer about just a mess. All the worst stereotypes of South American football fans. Mess. I was just reading 93 fans killed over the last decade in
football-related
deaths. Yeah. So it's a serious situation. Have you had any bad fan experiences? Buses, going to games, derbies?
The players he was with at Wimbledon were worse than the fans.
That's true, yeah.
I was going to say, I'm the coach. More so, I suppose, what was happening outside of the coach. I can tell you a few stories.
Who were they? Were you Crazy Gang? They were before
crazy
your time.
Crazy Light. Crazy Light.
They were the generation after.
They'd come before. They were.
You got Vinny's second one.
The return. Vinny the return.
Did you get Vinny?
Yeah, Vinny was back then. Yeah, Vinny had come back. There was a few lads still there. Andy Thorne, Efni Cook. There was a few. But there was a younger generation coming through after that.
So what were Vinny's go-to tactics in the dressing room on the bus?
No, well, he was very. But Vinny came back, his legs had gone. That was the thing. When Vinny had his legs, he was very effective and got some very good moves and played well for the different clubs.
No, I'm talking about off the pitch, like wrecking your head as a teammate. What pranks was he playing on you?
I'm not going to go down that avenue, obviously. I'm not.
Why?
I generally don't. Yeah, it's not my thing, to be honest with you. I'm not overly comfortable in terms of the old kind of, kiss and tell, and that this is what happened and that, and, referencing names. And, for me, kind of, what happened in and around the football. That's what makes it special. I have some great memories from my time at club and international level. But what makes them special is because they're pretty much confined to the group, more or less.
This is what I love about you, is you say this, right, and then I'll get Vinnie Jones's book and he'll have told all of them 10 times over.
Yeah, no, you understand, and I listen to other lads telling this, and other lads are
Think there's this omerta, and actually you're the only idiot who's not saying anything.
I'm getting battered, yeah. I'm getting lambasted left, right and centre, yeah.
Alright.
That was great. No, great times there. But
alright, you don't have to say anything, it's fine.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to go into too much, but it was a very unique experience. It was crazy light, but even still, it was a great experience. Only looking back, really, probably didn't appreciate it at the time, but looking back, it was pretty unique in terms of how the club operated behind the scenes. Very professional in a lot of respects, I'll say that.
Right.
And a lot of it very controlled, that kind of controlled madness, I'd call it, at times as well.
Did it bug you, though? Like, say there's people cutting up your clothes or going to the toilet in your wash bag and all that kind of stuff.
No, not so much. Look, I wasn't totally innocent myself.
See, now we're into the weeds of it.
No, I had to make a decision very on when I arrived at Wimbledon. I don't remember much, but after a short period of time when I arrived at that club, I thought, I'm going to have to take a step back here into the shadows, or I'm going to have to take a big step forward.
Okay.
Yeah, and get involved. And that's what I decided to do. And it was the right thing to do because I kind of engaged with people and... Yeah, and
Millwall was hardly a kindergarten, though, was it? By comparison,
no, I was. The dressing room was quite unique. Wimbledon really was.
Okay. If you stepped back into the shadows at Wimbledon, so say all the madness has gone around, the pranks and all that kind of stuff, were there certain players where they said, "You know what? I can't function if I'm part of this madness. I'm going to step back And were you left alone then, or would they almost prank you till you had to join?
No, that's what it was. Generally, if you took a step back, you'd be left to, you know, left around the boat. There wasn't too many of them. Generally, even the younger players coming through were quite vocal, kind of good personalities. And the kind of manager encouraged it as well. Joe Kinnear was there. And so, and even the owner, Sam Aman. And it was amazing for a club as small as we were, and Wimbledon was the smallest club in terms of size, Premiership, and
structure was tiny.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No grounds, you know, 10 in Selhurst Park, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
But in terms of column inches, Rich, there wasn't a week that didn't go by. Mm. There wasn't a story about Wimbledon, back page, boom, boom, boom. And that wasn't coincidence. That's where, when I talk about kind of control madness, that's kind of what I'm talking about. There was kind of people behind the scenes there, and the chairman was one of the owner, a very clever man. Eventually sold the club and made a lot of money, and fair play to him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, very clever, very astute in terms of the profile of the club, very much aware of that. Went against us on occasion, a few little pranks and a little bit, you know, at times you think, oh, come on. Like, but generally speaking, you know, people were aware of the club and they were interested.
And last question, because we've gone way over time here, we've got to take a break. If you were one of the players who did step back and was like, I'm not part of all this, and you were left alone, were there players like that who would have survived for a long time in the dressing room fine and they would have had good careers there, or did they almost
weren't
settle?
You know, no, they weren't kind of ostracised.
They were happy
not at all. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They were still very much part of the group. But right. I do remember thinking, I need to come out of my shell here a little bit. I need to involve myself. And I'm glad I did, because...
Yeah.
You know, you're part of it there, you're making a contribution, you know, lots of big personalities all buzzing off each other. And it's the whole dressing room, you know, has got a real energy about it. And that was important to us.
Shaving people's eyebrows, fair play to you, that's great. we'll take a short break. Kenny's going to talk us through some of the 8 o'clock kickoffs, including the two Manchester games and Real Madrid against Roma as well. We're back in one sec.
Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.